Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to episode 11 of Say Why to Drugs. Before we start, I wanted to share the extremely exciting news that last Saturday I went to QEDCon in Manchester, where Say Why to Drugs was awarded the Ockham Award for Best Podcast from The Skeptic magazine. It was such an honour to get the award, so thank you to everybody who voted for us. Also, I'm really glad that everyone enjoyed the last bonus episode with Bristol Drugs Project. I thought it was really, really interesting. Now, this episode sees the return of Scroobius Pip, and we're back to our usual format. And today, we're discussing a substance that is very hard to avoid. Pip and I say why to caffeine.
Susie Gage.
Excellent. All right, then. Let's talk about caffeine.
Yes, let's.
Also known as methylated xanthine. I'm sure we all call it that all the time.
Constantly. Can I have a triple methylated xanthine with cinnamon?
Yes, exactly. It's a weird one because it's naturally found in plants and things, but it is also, you can synthesise it as well.
Right.
When we drink coffee, it tends to be the caffeine that's naturally found in coffee beans. And when we drink tea, the caffeine that's naturally in tea leaves. But there's big warehouses in China that make synthetic caffeine, a white powder, basically.
Yeah, and I'd imagine, is that what's in soft drinks more often than not? Would that be the case?
I don't know, actually. I think you can, because you can extract it from the like coffee beans and things as well.
Yeah,
so
it
could be either, I think, naturally extracted. As far as I'm aware, it's only recently that they've started to synthesize it.
And again, in reality, with soft drinks and whatnot, it's financially driven. So they'll probably be using whatever is the cheapest of the two in reality. It's not going to be with coffee, obviously, there's great almost snobbery. With coffee, so it will be, no, we use these specific beans and this, and it's for the flavour and for that, whereas with drinks and energy drinks even more so. I mean, that's got to be synthesised. And some of them, Red Bull and Monster and all things like that.
But I mean, caffeine is caffeine is caffeine, whether it's synthesised or whether it's from the plant. It's the same chemical, ultimately. Yeah. Okay, so this is a slightly unusual question to ask you, but what do you think is the appeal of caffeine?
People always talk about it of just energy, needing a coffee in the morning before they can get going and things like that, which again I'm excited to hear about because I've never had coffee. I don't have a lot of caffeine in my diet. I've never had tea or coffee, but it's an interesting one because in previous episodes we've talked about different drugs and how long they take, and I'm sure we'll get into this later, how long they take to take effect. But from what I was looking at briefly, it seems that caffeine is a slowish one to give effect. So it seems that people having it in the morning or whatever, a lot of it is a psychological thing or a mental thing of going, I need my coffee to get me, to wake me up, when actually it will take 2 to 3 hours to actually get into your blood and wake you up properly. But to answer a less rambly, it always seems to be energy. If you need to stay awake at night, if you need to get through the day, if you need that pick me up at the end of work, that I'll have a shot of espresso or whatever, and caffeine will,
or a can of Coke or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think as well, it's very socially acceptable.
Yeah.
As a drug, it's not that mind altering in comparison to lots of the other drugs that we've talked about on these podcasts.
I mean, it's got to be the most socially acceptable drug, right? Because alcohol, although it's very acceptable, there is still some taboo over it. There is still, people will think you've got an alcohol problem. Smoking, as we've discussed, has become more and more less socially acceptable. Mm-hmm. But caffeine is the one you rarely have people worry that someone's drinking too much coffee or things like that, when it is a drug and can have addiction and can have negative effects if you have too much.
And I think you've touched on something else there, that it's legal and it's mostly completely unregulated.
Yeah, yeah.
Certainly in terms of things like tea and coffee, there's not really any regulations about whether you can go and buy that. With energy drinks, it's maybe slightly different in that there's a sort of, I don't think it's legal, but certainly an expectation to put the amount of caffeine that's contained within an energy drink on the can.
On the side, right, yeah.
We'll get onto it in a bit, but it's a lot more difficult to do that for coffee and tea.
Yeah.
Certainly where things are brewed that you brew yourself, it can really vary the amount.
Yeah, it depends how much you put in and so on and so forth. It can be as irrelevant as some of them things on the side of packets that tell you the percentage of your daily fat intake, and then it turns out this is 1/8 of the packet and things like that. So again, it'll be similar with coffee. That
oh god, that happened to me with some olives the other day. I was just eating them thinking, right, this is 22% of the salt I need for the day, and then I realised it was for 1/4 of them and I'd eaten them all, and so that was my entire day's worth of salt.
I think it's outrageous on them that it has all that. It's just not broken down. It's like they could be, it could be half a packet, it could be a whole packet, it could be anything.
Yeah, and it was definitely psychosomatic, because I felt really odd after reading that. I felt fine until I read that, and then I was like, oh yeah, now I feel very
strange.
It
kicked in.
Anyway, we're not talking about salt today. Sorry.
Or olives.
Or olives. Okay, a little pop quiz. How much caffeine do you think is in different substances? So do you think there's more in a can of Coke or a can of Red Bull?
I'd assume a can of Red Bull, because that's kind of what they're marketing on, right?
Yeah, so a Red Bull, a 250ml Red Bull is about the same as two cans of Coke or Pepsi. Okay, more in a can of Coke or a can of Sunkist?
Again, I'd assume Coke, because you just think of it like that, but
yeah. I assume that as well.
You look at as more, not healthy, but more fruit-based rather than...
I was really surprised that there's caffeine in Sunkist, but there is actually. There's more in more in Sunkist than Coke just, but I mean, it's roughly the same. On the table in front of us right now is a book that I was reading on the train up here by a guy called Murray Carpenter, who wrote a whole book about caffeine. And in that, he has sort of created what he refers to as a SCAD, a standard caffeine dose.
Right.
And this is about 75 milligrams, roughly equivalent to a shot of espresso, 150 milliliters of coffee, one can of Red Bull, two cans of Coke, a pint of Diet Coke. And because it's really difficult to sort of compare drinks in terms, or in particular drinks, I think we're going to mostly be talking about drinks. There are kind of caffeine pills that you can take, things like Pro Plus.
Yeah.
But we just think of things that contain caffeine and perhaps not the actual amounts that are contained as well. But that Sunkist thing really surprised me.
I've just realised, I've said that I don't have much caffeine in my diet, but I have these pre-workout gels and they have caffeine in. And again, it's one of the things I saw as, all right, that's a good idea then, because I don't generally use caffeine, so that should in theory be a boost, but
we'll get on to sort of the effects of caffeine in people who are and aren't tolerant to it in a minute, so you can then reassess maybe or not. But caffeine's also in things other than drinks, so caffeine's in chocolate, and there's more caffeine in dark chocolate than milk chocolate,
because I have to remove any claim of having a low caffeine a lifestyle then, because chocolate's a big part of my existence.
But the caffeine rather in chocolate is similar-ish to the levels that you find in decaf, tea and coffee.
Right.
So this is sort of orders of magnitude lower than what you find in caffeinated tea and coffee.
Sure.
So there is caffeine in it, but it's not going to have such a big effect on you as if you were drinking a big coffee.
It's weird. I stay up a lot for mixed martial arts events, and they're on till 6 a.m. in the morning on UK time. And during them, I eat a lot of chocolate, and I think that's what keeps me going more. Because I've got a sweet tooth, a lot of my friends who come round for it won't be eating chocolate constantly as I will, and they'll be falling asleep and drifting off, and I think that...
And probably the sugar as well. Yeah.
Of course, yeah.
And caffeine's also in guarana, which is another extract from, I think it's a berry or a seed.
Yeah.
It might be a seed.
It's one that a lot of the energy drinks were pushing when it became popular. It was like, they'd have...
Yeah. And then yerba mate, which is a type of tea that's popular in Argentina, I think in Syria as well, but that's a sort of more caffeinated drink than tea or coffee, but it's very popular. When I was in Uruguay earlier this year, everyone was drinking it out on the beach, and they all had these special kind of cups that everyone was using, and it was very rare to see people hanging out not drinking it, which I guess is like our coffee culture here. But having said that, like, there's this amount in this drink and that amount in that drink, I've also sort of hinted that it can really vary within substances. So this guy called Bruce Goldberger did some... So he went to one coffee shop, the same coffee shop, on 6 consecutive days and put in the same order and tested the caffeine levels, and the same drink from the same shop,
like the same place, wasn't like a different store of the same company. And it varied between the amount of caffeine between 260 milligrams and 564.
Wow.
So that's quite a big difference.
Yeah, that's huge.
This was in the States. There was another study done in Glasgow where they went round to a number of different cafes in Glasgow and found that, yeah, the amount of caffeine in a one-shot latte or espresso or whatever was really, really different in different places.
It's fascinating, isn't it? Because it goes to the unregulated nature of it again. Because in a bar, generally, if you have a shot of Smirnoff every day, you test that, it's going to be there or thereabouts, isn't it? Because
if
of how regulated
bars
it is.
Use optics, certainly.
Yeah, yeah.
If you go to the
yeah.
States when they make you a gin and tonic, it's insane.
Yeah,
they
just
tip it in, because I think it's a different way of drinking over there. But
yeah, a lot of my American friends know to just really try and engage the barman in conversation as they're making the drink to try and distract
money.
And get the most out of it.
But the things that affect the caffeine in coffee are a variety of things. So the growing conditions of the bean, the plant itself, will affect how much caffeine ends up in the bean. The variety of the bean, and then obviously the brewing method and the strength of the brew that you make will also have an effect.
Yeah.
So what are some of these effects of caffeine?
Yeah.
Have you ever sort of had a very caffeinated drink by accident or anything? Do you have any idea of what a sort of caffeine experience is like?
It's a weird one, because I'd be interested to hear the effects of caffeine on people who don't have it regularly, because I found when I was doing a lot of late night drives on early days of touring, I'd drink a Red Bull. I wouldn't really feel what you're meant to get from a Red Bull. I wouldn't feel more awake. I found that just drinking plenty of water had a better effect on me. So I don't know if you have to be, again, I'd read somewhere that you, to get the effect from caffeine, you kind of have to be a regular caffeine user, whereas if you're having it once every month, it's not going to have the effect of someone who's having it every day, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it really does make sense. So the short-term effects of caffeine, you get an onset roughly an hour after you consume it, and the effects last for about 3 to 4 hours. It's a stimulant, so it should improve alertness, maybe concentration, reaction time, reduce drowsiness. It has physical effects on the body, so it can potentially improve your athletic ability, things like sprinting, cycling and endurance activities.
There's rules in, again, not to keep going back to mixed martial arts, but it's the one I'm most knowledgeable of. There's a limit on the amount of coffee you can have prior to an event, because it then goes over to becoming a performance-enhancing drug.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that, because I went to a cycling event thing and there was a sports scientist there, and he was talking about how caffeine can be useful if you're going on long cycles, and he said it's impossible to have too much caffeine. That's definitely not true.
Right.
It's definitely possible to have too much caffeine.
Yeah.
It's quite difficult to have too much caffeine if you consume it in drinks, but if you take supplements, which you can buy caffeine supplements, this white powder, it's only about a tablespoon of that sort of neat caffeine that can push you into quite severe toxicity, and it's definitely a bad idea. But there's a caffeine researcher in my department in the University of Bristol.
Right.
So I was speaking to him about the work that he does, and he sent me a few papers that he's done where he's looked at the effects of caffeine on people who are tolerant to caffeine and people who aren't tolerant to caffeine, so people who don't use it and people who use it quite regularly. And it's really interesting, the sort of interplay between where the tolerance increases and the sort of different things that caffeine can improve and worsen. So in people who aren't tolerant to caffeine, it can improve your sort of physical performance. So things like your reaction time and weird psychology tests that people do. So things like how quickly can you tap a button and that kind of thing. How quickly can you respond to something that appears on a screen? So it's all done in like a lab environment. But regardless of whether you were tolerant or not, caffeine improved your ability at these kind of physical tasks. In terms of sort of mental tasks, the caffeine improved the people who were tolerant to caffeine, it improved their ability to do these
things. So they're the ones who have caffeine regularly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. People who regularly use it improved their ability on these. But for people who weren't used to caffeine, any improvement that you might have seen in these kind of sort of mental tasks was outweighed by the real increase in kind of anxiety feelings and the sort of the jitters that you get if you're not used to caffeine. The stimulant nature of it can make you feel quite wired, and
that's interesting,
quite unpleasant.
Where I was saying about trying Red Bull to stay awake and stuff like that, I had that. I didn't feel more mentally alert or awake, but I felt tingly. I felt kind of a bit like I kept having to stretch my arms out and stuff like that. I felt kind of,
sort of almost like uncomfortable in your own skin.
Yeah,
kind of
completely.
Feeling.
Which, again, isn't bad if you're trying to stay awake, I guess. Yeah. A little bit of discomfort is...
Yeah, maybe.
Keep you focused.
And sort of one of the other sort of drawbacks of caffeine tolerance is actually the more tolerant you are of caffeine, so the more you take it, the less it has this ability to wake you up,
right,
to reduce the drowsiness.
So you'll gradually need more and more. Again, with you'd assume with most drugs, like, again, we don't think of coffee as a drug, but with most drugs you'd think if you're having X amount a day, then that will stop. You'll start to need more than that to get the same buzz and the same hit.
I think we definitely should consider caffeine a drug,
because completely.
It sort of fulfills all the criteria of drugs in that it can be addictive, it's something that you get tolerant to, and it changes your sort of bodily response, mind and body response.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because as we were saying beforehand, of all the things I've admitted to taking at some point on this podcast, coffee and higher levels of caffeine isn't something I've had. But my dad was, when I was younger, my dad had a caffeine addiction. He had to go and see someone about it because he was just drinking so much coffee at work and just being at a desk, and it was making him burnt out and agitated and stressed and short-tempered and stuff like that. And it was
And in fact, I've got some of those things listed as sort of the problems of overdoing caffeine. Caffeine's also a diuretic, which means it makes you need to go to the loo more, but actually not really in the doses that it's sort of normally consumed in. You'd need to have 2 or 3 coffees or 5 to 8 cups of tea in very, very quick succession for it to have that kind of diuretic effect. Which is why, like, when people are dehydrated, people always sort of say, oh, you know, you shouldn't drink tea or coffee because it's a diuretic. But actually, it's got loads of water in it as well.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's probably
course.
Better to drink that than nothing.
Than nothing, sure. Yeah.
Caffeine toxicity, if you have too much caffeine, then you can feel, and I've experienced this and it's really unpleasant, sort of get dizziness, even more increased anxiety, kind of shakes and palpitations. And at really, really high doses, it can be fatal, but it's very hard to get those high doses. As I said, with drinking, you'd need to drink about 50 cups of coffee or 200 cups of tea in sort of very, very, very quick succession.
Yeah.
Heavy, regular caffeine use is linked to insomnia, unsurprisingly, and potentially heart attacks, although these are extremely unlikely unless you've already got underlying sort of heart problems. It's the same. We've said this with pretty much every stimulant that we've talked about. The ones that increase your blood pressure and increase your heart rate are going to put your heart and that kind of system at more risk. So if you're already at risk, it's more dangerous. But yeah, these sort of factors are quite rare, perhaps. But there's a sort of other side to caffeine, and that's the caffeine withdrawal. So if you're used to drinking caffeine, then, or if you're used to taking any substance, then the withdrawal tends to be a sort of opposite kind of effect. So with caffeine, you can get quite bad headaches. Sort of lethargy and sleepiness and inability to concentrate.
This is a really unscientific and unprofessional anecdotal bit of information, but some friends of mine, again, from back in the day, who used to experiment with a lot of different drugs and be crazy youths, I remember them all telling me after one night they'd had a party and didn't have any drugs, and they did the biggest amount of coffee you can imagine in like a saucepan, and drank that and got a bit of a buzz, but they said it was the worst come down they've had of any drug they've ever done, because it was this thing. It wasn't a massive effect, because as you said, you'd have to drink a huge amount to really get that far, and they did drink a huge amount, but their anecdotal thing there was that come down, that withdrawal was the worst that they'd experienced on any kind of drug. So it's an odd one.
I don't know whether it's something to do with academia, but certainly caffeine is very popular in universities. In fact, our department put on coffee at 11 a.m. every day.
Yeah.
And to be fair to them, there's 2 pots of caffeinated and 1 pot of decaf. And it seems to be mainly the people who research coffee who are the ones who drink the decaf.
Slightly worrying.
But withdrawal can also lead to sort of things like depression and irritability, but also physical things like stomach pain and joint pain. And caffeine withdrawal is really quite common. About half of caffeine users who have 2 to 3 coffees per day who go into withdrawal get headaches. It's just we have coffee so much, so it sort of becomes part of your routine. You wake up and on the way to work, you go and pick up a coffee, or when you get into work, you immediately have a cup of tea or something like that.
Yeah,
it's something that we really use habitually, probably more even than alcohol. It's something that
completely.
People tend to have every day.
And as kind of said, the acceptableness of it is you may not associate the headaches you're getting with withdrawal, because again it's so accepted and common that
and
you might
really
not
seen as
associate
a drug.
And go, all right, it's because of the amount of coffee I'm having or the addiction building up.
Yeah. Okay, should we move on to myths?
Yes, let's.
I put out a shout out on Twitter and Facebook and things for some myths, and someone mentioned the obvious one that I think you mentioned and another friend of mine mentioned.
And it's annoying because I mentioned this knowing the answer to it, but I mentioned it to get it in here because it's a common one, and then I had one person correct me and I felt like an idiot going, no, I knew that. I knew that. I was just putting just.
Well, that's. I was actually just about to say that as well. That like this is the one where everyone who mentioned it to me, and a few people did, had someone else go, actually, it's this, which I thought was really funny. Yeah. But I always slightly worry with those kind of myths that everyone knows the correction to. It makes me think, oh, actually, maybe there's more to it than that as well. Because quite often that's the way these things perpetuate, is because. When you think you know, it's like what happens in QI.
Yeah.
Someone says that the answer and it's wrong, and then they get corrected, and then like the next series, someone says the correction answer, and then it goes, actually, no, we've looked further. But yeah, so is there more caffeine in tea than coffee?
Yeah.
And as you said, and lots of other people said as well, that yes, there's more by dry weight, but because of the way that it's brewed, then there's not more in the end drink. Yeah. In the end drink, there's.
Because in general, we are drinking the coffee bean as such, we're just mixing it in, whereas with tea you're dipping it in and getting the kind of infusing it rather than.
I'm not sure if that's the reason, because that's the way like you grind up the coffee beans, but you still then sort of put the water through them. You don't actually drink the bean itself. Yeah. So I think it's still, but anyway, it's the way
it's the way it's brewed and the way it's made.
It ends up that you, well, I think you just use a lot more coffee per cup than you do tea.
I guess
leaves.
So, yeah.
Yeah, if you, certainly by weight, a tea bag is very lightweight because the leaf. Yeah. But anyway, that is the, put that myth to bed.
Yes.
Oh, and another sort of similarly related one, green tea has no caffeine. Lots of people say that, like, oh no, I'm not drinking caffeine, can I have a green tea? I've got a bit of bad news that there's probably similar amounts of caffeine in green tea and black tea leaves.
Right.
How much caffeine ends up in your drink, again, depends on how you make your drink, how long you brew it for, how much you stir it for. Mm-hmm. So like the more you agitate the tea bag, sort of stirring it around and squeezing it and stuff, the more caffeine comes out.
Yeah.
Pretty much all the caffeine will come out within the first sort of minute or so.
Yeah.
So if I ever run out of decaf tea bags, what I tend to do is make someone else a cup of tea and then use that bag to make myself a cup of tea afterwards, that it has less caffeine in it. But obviously that's a very unscientific way to get less caffeine. Okay, it's impossible to have too much caffeine. Now, as I've already mentioned this, it's definitely not true. You can go into caffeine toxicity, and we've discussed the symptoms of that, pretty unpleasant. There have been some case reports of fatalities from taking too much caffeine.
Right.
It's hard to know whether if it was definitely the caffeine that caused these kind of things, but caffeine has been listed on death certificates as cause of death.
Wow. Yeah.
So you have to take an awful lot, as I mentioned, but it's not impossible to have too much caffeine, basically.
Yeah,
you can have too much caffeine. Caffeine doesn't have any effect unless you're already using it. The effect is just bringing you out of withdrawal.
Yes, that's one that I'd kind of heard.
Yeah, so we've sort of covered this in kind of the effects of caffeine earlier, that there are some effects that are a result of bringing you out of withdrawal. So things like alleviating headaches, feeling more awake, that kind of thing. They're just reversing the withdrawal effects.
Yeah.
But in people who've never drunk coffee, it does have some effects. Not necessarily good effects, though. The things like the increased anxiety and jitteriness, that's an effect, but not necessarily one that you'd want.
From what you've said, it seems there's the physical effects are there regardless, and more the mental or mind-based effects are tied in with addiction and if you're a regular user already. Because, again, I think I'd heard on QI that caffeine just brings you back up to the level you would have been at if you'd never had caffeine.
Yeah.
So if you've never had it, you're at that level already. If you've had it, then you'll wake up each morning more lethargic and more this and that, and then you need to be brought up to that level.
Yeah, absolutely. All those withdrawal symptoms that we talked about, sort of, feeling sluggish and feeling unable to do things and not being able to concentrate, will be reversed by your first cup of coffee in the morning.
It shouldn't be a surprise, because, again, if we stopped not really viewing it as a drug, the fact is, even if you've had a couple of glasses of wine or a couple of beers the night before, you'll generally wake up a bit more lethargic than you would if you've just had water all night cunning. So it's similar. Any drug you've taken the day before, you'd think, is going to have some effect.
Yeah. It's probably not the best idea to have a compensatory glass of wine first thing in the morning bring you out of withdrawal.
To bring me back.
So decaf still has caffeine in it.
Right.
And yes, we've sort of mentioned this before already. It's usually about an order of magnitude lower than caffeinated drinks. So some figures I found on the internet suggest, that sounds really dodgy, some figures I found on the Mayo Clinic's website on the internet, not just randomly
just
on a forum or something, is 0 to 12 milligrams in a decaf tea or coffee. Mm-hmm. And that's compared to sort of 75 grams is one of those caffeine, sort of standard caffeine doses that this Murray Carpenter man used in his book as like one dose of caffeine. So you can see that's an awful lot lower.
Yeah.
And some might have really trace or nothing, but most decaffeinated drinks, you'll still be getting a tiny bit of caffeine.
Right, sure.
But, yeah, not very much. And the other thing that someone mentioned to me is about, does caffeine affect how you absorb iron? So this is potentially a problem for people who are anemic and that kind of thing, who need to eat, get their iron through eating iron-rich foods or taking iron supplements.
Yeah.
And it's sort of a myth, but not really. It's not the caffeine itself, but it's other things in both coffee and tea, these things called polyphenols, that actually inhibit iron absorption.
That's interesting.
So tannin in tea, and I think tannin is in coffee as well, and chlorogenic acid, which is in coffee. These things can inhibit the absorption of iron. And so people who are trying to who've been sort of medically prescribed or told to increase their iron intake are advised not to drink tea or coffee for 2 hours before or 2 hours after either eating their iron-rich food or taking their iron supplements because it will impact quite significantly as well, up to sort of 60% reduction in your ability to absorb iron.
Yeah.
But it's not the caffeine that does it, but it is the tea and the coffee that does it.
Yeah, sure. That's interesting.
So does caffeine have any benefits, any medical benefits?
Right.
It sort of does. So if you've ever taken painkillers beyond just paracetamol or ibuprofen, they quite often are mixed with caffeine.
Right.
So it's used certainly in sort of treatments for hangover as well.
Yeah.
But actually, there have been some trials done, and it does look like including about 100 milligrams of caffeine with a painkiller makes the painkiller a small amount, but a statistically significant amount more effective.
Right. Because, and again, often there'll be different ones on cold and flu tablets as well, where it will say, don't take before you go to bed because it's got caffeine, it will keep you awake. I assume it's why they do variations of nighttime ones rather than your regular daytime one, because it's using caffeine to ramp it all up a bit.
And 100 milligrams isn't a small amount either. It's sort of a decent cup of coffee kind of amount. But caffeine citrate is also on the WHO list of essential medicine, and it's used to treat or prevent infant breathing disorders.
Right.
So there are sort of medical benefits to caffeine that's sort of well known about.
Yeah.
And there's also interesting work going on at the moment that's very much in its early days, but I keep getting press releases about using caffeine as potentially being protective against Parkinson's, cancer and Alzheimer's. And all of this work is kind of ongoing at the moment, but it's another case where these sort of things that we think of as recreational drugs might actually have other uses as well, and sort of being looked at the moment to try and work out sort of whether this is the case, why these... It's quite often if you see sort of associations observationally with people who choose to drink coffee versus people who don't, and we've talked about confounding quite a lot in previous podcasts, but the people who drink coffee are different in lots of other ways from the people who don't.
Of course.
Understanding these associations is quite difficult, but caffeine's quite an easy one to justify doing a randomised controlled trial. It's not as harmful, or certainly it's easier, maybe socially acceptable to get the permission to do these kind of studies. So hopefully we might start seeing some really interesting results about whether caffeine is or isn't useful in these kind of situations.
It's fascinating that caffeine is seen and known as something to kind of give you a boost and give you that extra energy. But it's interesting to hear that it kind of works in a similar way with other drugs. So you'll put caffeine in with other drugs to give that effect, mm-hmm. a boost, an extra energy or whatever else. So it's weird how that's a transferable trait.
Before we sort of wrap up this episode, a few other things that are sort of interesting about caffeine.
Yeah.
Are some people more susceptible to the effects of caffeine than others? And it does seem like, there's some sort of genetic aspect to how we metabolize caffeine or how we experience caffeine.
Yeah.
So some research has shown that some people have a genetic predisposition to experience caffeine-related anxiety.
Right.
This means that these people might be less likely to start using caffeine.
Yeah.
Because the first time they try it, they get a particularly strong kind of jittery, anxious feeling, and so they just keep away from it.
Yeah.
But actually, in people who then go on to use it regularly, the people with this predisposition are just as likely to develop a tolerance than the people without it. So it might put them off starting in the first place, but if they do then get used to it, they'll build up their tolerance to caffeine.
Yeah, sure.
But this idea of sort of genetic predisposition to experiencing the effects of drugs is kind of something we're also just beginning to really try and understand.
Yeah.
It's been obvious, it's true for all sorts of different drugs that different people have different experiences when they're on them.
Of course.
And that some of it is down to genetics kind of makes sense, because the genes code for proteins which might be involved in the metabolism of the drug or might prevent the drug being sort of taken up, or all these different possibilities of the way that different levels of proteins and things inside our bodies can affect how we experience consumption of other things.
And it's a fascinating one, because it then causes arguments with anything that is that then has to be regulated, because it is such an individual thing. And alcohol, which we've done a very popular episode on, is a prime example of that, because people will say, well, I'm fine after 2 pints, but someone else isn't fine after 2 pints. And it's not as simple as size, which a lot of people say, I'm a bigger guy, I can handle. It's like there's so much more in our bodies and in everything else in our genetics that will make you more or less tolerant. So you have to kind of make a blanket rule of, well, here's the rule for everyone. And leave it at that.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you mention alcohol there as well, because I think there's interesting interactions between caffeine and alcohol.
Right.
And in particular, in relation to energy drinks.
Mm-hmm.
There are alcoholic energy drinks which can potentially sort of mask the intoxication that you're feeling with alcohol. So, I mean, I remember when I was a teenager, everyone was drinking vodka Red Bulls.
I was going to say, vodka Red Bulls became the biggest thing. And then there was a rumour that they'd been banned for some reason. There was all sorts of, all the stupid things you get at these when there's a new fad. But yeah.
Well, it certainly is the case that it might make you feel like you're less drunk than you are, but you're probably, well, you're certainly still consuming the same amount of alcohol.
And therefore doing the same damage.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also might mean that you're more drunk than you realise, which could get you into sort of problems in terms of if you think you're fine but you end up in a situation where you're not fine, you know, and you sort of find it more difficult to walk than you might realize, because mentally you might still be feeling a bit alert from the caffeine. So it's a really sort of worrying development, and as you say, it's something that's really not been that well researched. And I think it's something, it's like an interesting avenue to look at, whether consuming caffeine and alcohol together is sort of more than the sum of its parts, if you know what I mean.
It feels almost like it's a I mean, as you said, they're a masking element in that respect, but almost a fighting and natural warning system, because in general you know when you've drunk too much. And I've grown up in Essex. A lot of people choose to ignore that signal when they've drunk too much, and that's just the midpoint of the night. But the idea of something, I like that, going, right, let's turn off that thing that's going to tell me I'm at my limit, so that I can go that much further past it.
That's the really good way of explaining it. And there's also interactions with tobacco. So you think coffee and cigarettes, it kind of goes together, and there might be a good reason for that. Smoking makes you metabolize caffeine quicker, which means that you probably want more coffee.
Right.
But if you're trying to quit smoking, your metabolism will have slowed down again, meaning you might be more likely to go into caffeine toxicity.
Right.
And the things you experience when you're in caffeine toxicity, the sort of feelings of like anxiety and jitteriness, are quite similar to tobacco withdrawal. So there's some sort of wondering that maybe if you are used to drinking more coffee and then you stop smoking, that actually you might be more likely to start smoking again, because you experience caffeine toxicity,
yeah.
mistake it for
yeah.
nicotine withdrawal, smoke a cigarette, that makes you metabolize the caffeine more quickly. So
and it's just a cycle. Yeah, it's an interesting one because a lot. I remember, again, when my dad was giving up cigarettes, he found he was drinking far much, loads more tea.
Yeah.
And again, it's more a habitual thing, I think. Mm-hmm. So rather than having a cigarette in his hand, he's got a cup of tea in his hand. But that's interesting that a better way to do it, potentially, if you're trying to give up cigarettes, would be to cut down yeah. on tea and coffee as well. In line with it
yeah.
to reduce those physical effects.
Well, this is still sort of a theory at the moment, but some research is going on. In fact, some of the people that I work with are doing research yeah. into this at the moment. But the idea is that, yeah, if you could
just
offer this as advice...
sitting around smoking and drinking coffee in his research. Best gig in the world.
But if it is the case that this is what's happening, then if you can... If people are wanting to make a smoking quit attempt, then if you could encourage them to... begin to cut down on their coffee before
yeah.
they do it, this could potentially help in terms
yeah,
of them
that's great.
Sticking to their quit attempt. And then I've somehow managed to end the podcast about caffeine talking about tobacco.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
whoops. But, yeah.
And there we are. I really hope you enjoyed that episode. As always, feel free to get in touch on Facebook or Twitter. You can find me at Sousaphone. That's Sousaphone. And do join us for the next episode in 2 weeks' time when Pip and I will be discussing heroin. Bye!
You've been listening to Say Why to Drugs with me, Dr. Susie Gage. The music and editing were by Jim Murray. The artwork is by @MyNameIsAd. Say Why to Drugs would not have been possible without the generous support of I'm a Scientist, Get Me Out of Here, the Medical Research Council, and Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.